In the Bhagavatam, we began the study with the first verse, Janma Yasyataha Anvayaritarastateshu Abhigyasvara Tene Brahma Riddhaya Arikavaye Muyanti Atsuraya Tejo Varimidam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Trisago Amrisha Dhamna Svena Sada Narastaku Gam Param Satyam Dhimahi. The first verse of the Bhagavatam glorifies the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. It glorifies Krishna. And that first verse defines the absolute truth in many wonderful ways. It is by him whom everyone is bewildered in the world of Maya, but he himself is beyond that world of Maya. He is situated in Goloka Vrindavan. After glorifying Krishna, the absolute truth, in the first verse, there have been so many verses that glorify that absolute truth. In the second chapter, in answer to the sage's questions, Savai Pumsam Parodamo, the highest religion, Yatya Bhakti Erhokshaje, is to render pure unalloyed devotional service to Krishna, who is beyond the material senses. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. So unto that Supreme Lord, who is known as Vasudev, one should offer full worship, loving, affectionate worship. And then in the third chapter, it describes how Vasudev or Krishna enters the material world as the Purusha incarnations and does his work in that way. And then so many incarnations of the Lord are listed of how that Supreme Lord, Vasudev, or Bhagawan, comes to the material world. And of all the different incarnations, they come from the Purusha, but it is Krishna Stu Bhagawan Sayam. It is Krishna who is the origin of that Purusha. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then in the fourth chapter, there are many questions asked. The sages continued to ask questions from Suta Goswami. And they asked questions about Srila Vyasadeva and where did he get the inspiration to write the Bhagavatam, because he had compiled so many other literatures. And in chapter 4, 5, 6, and the beginning of 7, we've heard that, where he got his inspiration from. And then, also, the sages asked about Sukadev Goswami, and they also asked about Maharaj Prickett's birth, his life, how he lived, and how he came to give up the kingdom, how he came in contact with Sukadev Goswami. And then, after those questions were asked in the fourth chapter, then we hear about Vyasadeva's inspiration. And we've just heard in the seventh chapter his mature and full revelation of the absolute truth, where Apashyanti Pona Purusha, he saw the Supreme Person, Maya Chattad Apasrayam, with Maya completely under control. And who is that Purna Purusha? That is Krishna Purna Purusha. So we've heard so much glorification up to this point about Krishna, the absolute truth. Indeed, Krishna, the absolute truth, the Purna Purusha, the complete person, the absolute truth, the Param Satyam. This Krishna is so attractive that Atmaramischam Munajo Nagranta Pirukrame Korvanti Ahetuki Bhakti Itambuddha Gunahari, that even those who are free from any material tinges, they are attracted to hear and perform devotional service to that person, Ugrama, the wonderful adventurer who has such itam buddha guna. He has such qualities that are so unique and marvelous. So everyone, even those who are beyond the material world, are so eager and attracted to serve and hear about his qualities. But as up to this point, we've heard about Krishna, glorifying him in his potency, but we have not yet seen Krishna in action. And now we shall see Krishna. This is the first time in the Bhagavatam we actually see Krishna. We've heard about him, now we're going to see him doing something. So in text 12, and it's very interesting, as we will find out, how we see Krishna the first time. There's this, first impressions are very important. When you meet a salesman whose business it is to make first impressions, they make sure that they're dressed in a particular way and they have a particular type of firm, trustworthy handshake. Because you remember how you first meet a person, what the first impression of him is. That very much sticks in the consciousness, in the mind. So it'll be very interesting to see how Krishna chooses to present himself for the first time in action in the Bhagavatam. So in text 12, Parikshito Atarajarshe Janma Karma Valapanam, asking about the Janma Karma, the birth and activities of Prikit Maharaj. Samstam Chapanduputranam Vyakshe Krishna Katodayam. Suta Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Prikit, the sage amongst kings. As well, I will narrate as well, topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So this is directly an answer to the questions of the sages in the fourth chapter. Tell us about the birth and activities of Prikit Maharaj. And also, because everything is connected, these activities are connected to Krishna. They are transcendental. And Prabhupada explains this in his purport. We'll read from there. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that he personally incarnates himself amongst the different kinds of living entities. And he takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord, is to be understood as transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. And when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana. But the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Srimad Bhagavatam is thus recommended by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. There is a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavad Purana who desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary cantos. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna. And thus, more foolishly than intelligently, they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specifically told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. So now, Sutta Goswami, by saying, Vakshe Krishna Kato Dayam, that that the narrations of Prakrit Maharaj will give rise, Krishna Kata Udayam. Udayam means rising. Sometimes the word Uday, it's like the sun arises. It's called Uday. So Krishna Kata Udayam means that when we hear about Prakrit Maharaj, the Krishna Kata is going to arise out of that. So therefore, Vakshe, therefore Sutta Goswami is very excited to speak this pastimes, the pastimes of Prakrit Maharaj. But we're not going to exactly start with Prakrit Maharaj, because that comes out later. But it actually comes up first in the next chapter, in chapter 8, in the section we'll cover tomorrow, the first mentions of Prakrit Maharaj. But leading up to that point, we will now hear something about Krishna, some wonderful Krishna Katha. Text 13:14. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So this section of the Bhagavatam that is being spoken is by Sutta Goswami takes place just after the battle of Kurukshetra. Basically, just as the battle has been concluded and it has been won by the Pandavas. We know how the whole Mahabharat basically leads up to this battle of Kurukshetra. There is such an intrigue. There is such conflict over who is going to rule the kingdom. Is it going to be the sinful and duplicitous and ambitious Duryodhana, or the personification of Dharma, of religion, Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas? Such intrigues take place. And then the battle is just about to start and Krishna is driving the chariot of his devotee Arjuna. And Arjuna tells Krishna, Sanayo Ubiyo Madhe Stapam Rattaya Maitrita. You please, my dear Krishna, even though you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you drive my chariot in the midst of both the armies. Because Arjuna was hesitating to fight. In illusion, or actually in fact, he saw the great destruction that was going to take place. He understood what was going to happen, and therefore he did not want to take part in it. He did not want to take part in the killing of 640 million people. He saw that this was going to happen, and therefore he wanted to stop his participation in the battle. He did not want to become involved in the sins, and so many different reasons, good reasons he had. But Krishna, after driving his chariot in the midst of the army, in a place in Kurukshetra known as Jyotisar, the essence of light or the essence of knowledge, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, to Arjuna. And in this Shastra, Krishna removed the illusion of Arjuna. And Arjuna understood that his prime duty was not so much to be concerned about the world and what happens, but his prime duty, his ultimate duty, was to surrender to Krishna as his devotee and serve the will of Krishna. This was the highest discrimination that he could have. And therefore he surrendered to Krishna and he fought. And as a result, millions and millions and millions of people were killed. Virtually speaking, only the Pandavas remained. And a few others. 640 million people killed. To dethrone Duryodhana, to place Dharma personified Yudhisthira Maharaj as the king. But even more than that, although that was certainly what was going on, but even more than that, Krishna was fulfilling the purpose of his incarnation, which was to remove the burden of the earth. We heard this in the list of incarnations. For Krishna's advent, because the world was overburdened by a sinful demonic population. So therefore Krishna came to remove the burden of earth, and he brought everyone together, and then you basically using his Kala Shakti, the force of time, and using Arjuna as his instrument, he annihilated everyone. All the while he was, during the battle, driving the chariot of Arjuna. So now that battle is over. And Yudhisthira was so such a man of honor. When it came down to it, the Pandavas had basically won, but Duryodhana was hiding, the opposing king. He was hiding under the water, and then they challenged him to fight, and it was agreed that whoever won this last fight, they would be the king, even though the Pandavas had won already. But this was the nature of Kshatriyas, to stake everything at every time, at every battle. So following Krishna's order again, Bhim struck Duryodhana below the belt and broke his thigh. Because Krishna knew the secret of the virtual invulnerability of Duryodhana. This was the only place that was weak, his thigh. And Bhim had previously vowed to break that thigh because when in the gambling match years before, when Draupadi was brought to the Kaurava assembly, Duryodhana lifted up his dhoti and motioned that Draupadi should sit on his thigh, and Bhima was burning. He vowed at that time, that very thigh that you had the nerve to expose, I shall break. So he did do that with his club under Krishna's order, even though it was not exactly in accord with the Kshatriya principles of battle, but he did that. So Duryodhana, all the soldiers had been killed basically, and the son of Dhritarashtra, who is Duryodhana, was lying down lamenting his loss and lamenting his life with his thigh broken, preparing to die. So this is the scene text 13 and 14 describes. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena, the son of Dronacharya, whose name was Asatam, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. He was one of the very few remaining warriors, and he was a warrior on the side of the Kauravas, not on the Pandavas side. And when the battle was basically everything was concluded, he decided that the five remaining, the sons of the Pandavas, who were boys, while they were sleeping, after everything was done, he killed them and chopped off their heads. And he took those heads and he brought them to Duryodhana. thinking that Duryodhana would be pleased that the Pandava sons, that their dynasty was basically finished, because Abhimanyu had been killed and the remaining Pandava sons, who were boys, sleeping. So Asatthama beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, Duryodhana, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, we can just imagine the grief of Draupadi. But we can more closely imagine the grief of Draupadi than the anger of Draupadi, because Draupadi was a Kshatriya princess. And Draupadi, we'll hear what kind of a fiery personality she was. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with her eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus, "O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana," because Asatthama was the son of Dronacharya, a great Brahmana teacher, and he had taught the Pandavas martial arts, the Dhanurveda. "When I present you with the head of that Brahmana, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then, after burning your sons' bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head." So she was a fiery personality, and Arjuna knew how to satisfy her. And even, there was some need for revenge for her to be pacified. This is also typical. So Arjuna said, "I will not tell you to stop crying. I will not try to remove your bereavement at this time. But when I come back with the head of this killer of your children, only at that time will I say that it's proper for you to be pacified, and we will take the tears. Then you can, with a resolved mind, that the act has been avenged to some degree at least, this heinous act has been avenged to some degree, then you can feel somewhat pacified." Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Because Arjuna, when he makes such statements like that, this is also described in the 89th or 90th chapter of Krishna book, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which that occurrence actually took place before the battle of Kurukshetra, how Arjuna promised the Brahmins in Dwarka that he would protect his son, and when he was unable to keep his word, he was a Kshatriya, a warrior, when he was unable to keep his word, he was ready to kill himself by entering into fire. Because for a Kshatriya like Arjuna, the pain of the fire was less torturous than the pain of failing to keep his word. Such a man of character. So he... So that was Arjuna. So Draupadi was pacified by the statement of Arjuna, because she knew that this he would either come back with the head of Aswatthama or he would not come back. So Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver. So we're going to see Krishna. Remember, we're curious to see how Krishna first presents himself. So here's the pastime of the Bhagavatam where Krishna first acts after we've heard about him for so long. He satisfied Draupadi by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons. And getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Asvatthama, the son of his martial teacher. So he got into his chariot, he equipped with furious weapons and bedecked with armor. He was in that chariot. And he drove, chasing Asvatthama to fight him, to kill him, to behead him. And at that time, who was driving his chariot? It was Krishna. So in the entirety of the Bhagavatam is so long, and here is the first time we actually see Krishna, the all-powerful absolute truth, who has Maya completely subjugated, who all the Purusha avatars, the sources of even Karana, Dakshay, Vishnu, whom universes are coming from his skin holes, and who has subjugated Maya, Krishna Purusha, Parama Purusha, the supreme absolute truth, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Sayam Param Satyam, the all-powerful personality. And what is he doing the first time we see him? He's driving the chariot of his devotee like a menial servant. This is astounding. That Krishna wants to be seen and wants to be known as the servant of his devotees. Bhakti Vatsalya Atma Parjantava Danyata. Krishna is so magnanimous. His magnanimity goes to the point of even giving himself fully to the service of his devotees. But when Arjuna was chasing Asvatthama, with Krishna driving the chariot, Asvatthama did not feel inclined at that point to relish this very sweet understanding of Krishna. Rather, he was on his own chariot and he fled as fast as he could. Because, although he had just done some killing, very, very heinously and very cowardly-like, he would not stand and fight Arjuna with his pride, because he would rather save his life than his pride at this point. So he fled. The murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, he fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada in his purport gives two examples of both how the sun god and Brahma fled in fear of the wrath of Lord Shiva. So similarly, Asvatthama fled in fear of Arjuna's anger. When the son of the Brahmin, Asvatthama, saw that his horses, so it's also very important, he's called in many places in this chapter, he is called Dvija Atmaja, the son of the Brahmana. In other places he'll be called Brahma Bandhu, the friend of the Brahmana or the associate of the Brahmana. But he himself is not considered a Brahmana, not because he fought in the battle, but rather because he acted in an unqualified way. So this is a very important point, and Prabhupada speaks about this many times in this chapter, that it is not by birth that makes one fixed in a particular position within the Vanashrama society. Rather than it being birth and automatic, The example is given as the son of a high court judge has a facility to become a high court judge, but that doesn't. But the fact that he's a son does not qualify him to sit on the bench and pass judgment. Rather, the fact that he is the son, he can be called properly the son of the judge, but he can't be called properly the judge. So similarly, the son of the of a brahmana can become qualified to be a brahmana, but his very birth does not make him a brahmana. So, when the son of the brahmana, Asatthama, saw that his horses were tired, in other words, he fled as far as he could, but his horses became tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of using the ultimate weapon, the brahmastra, the nuclear weapon. That is called the Sanskrit for that. Sometimes it is known as brahmastra, sometimes it is brahmashira. In this verse it is called brahmashira. Shira means head. So this is this weapon is the head of Brahma, or the ultimate weapon. So he was so terrified, even after committing such a heinous act. Since his life was in danger, text 20, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. So the nature, one has to have the weapon fully under control. So at this point, Asatthama knew he knew the art of throwing the weapon, firing the weapon by using sound vibration or mantra, sanctified mantras. But he did not know how to withdraw it, and because he didn't have the mastery over the weapon, he should not in fact have used it. It was irreligious, adharmic, for him to use the weapon. But he was so terrified that he would lose his life that he used it anyway. Because he felt he had no other recourse, with Arjuna coming upon him so quickly and he having no means of escape, he decided to throw the brahmastra. Thereupon, a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce, heading towards Arjuna, that Arjuna thought his own life in danger. And so, he began to address Lord Shri Krishna, who was driving his chariot. So what is the first, we see the first time we see Krishna, he's driving the chariot, serving his devotee Arjuna, and the first action that he's going to do and request that's going to be made of him is protect me. Because Krishna protects his devotees. So therefore Arjuna says, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam Abhayankara. That Krishna, Krishna, you are Mahabaho. You are mighty on. And the first glorification we're hearing of Krishna at this time is Bhaktanam Abhayankara. You eradicate the fears of your devotee. Because in this world, there is so much fear. As long as there is any identification with the body, everyone is always in fear and anxiety. Fear for one's life, fear for one's property, fear for one's security. Fear, 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 fear. Bhaktanam Abhayankaram. That if one becomes a devotee of Krishna, what will happen? So Arjuna first says that, and then tam eko dayamananam apavago si samsrite. Oh my Lord Sri Krishna, 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 O mighty Om, you are the protector of your devotees from all fear. You, eko dayamananam, means those who are suffering from in the midst of material miseries, samsrite, those who are suffering in the midst of material miseries, you are the giver of upavarga, or liberation from those miseries. Because there is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Defending means fearing. And because one doesn't defend unless one has fear. So the fear principle is the strongest principle in the material world. Because everyone is afraid in the material world. So if for no other reason for taking shelter of Krishna in the midst of all the material miseries, samsrite, this reason will be most prominent. Distress and fear, and I don't know what else to do, and I've tried all my own tricks to get out of this situation. Now I have no other hope. And then Krishna, 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 Mahabaho, Bhaktaram, Abhyankara. Help me, Krishna, please. I'm your devotee. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Arjuna was aware of the transcendental qualities of Lord Sri Krishna, as he had already experienced them during the Kurukshetra war, in which both of them were present. Therefore, Arjuna's version of Lord Krishna is authoritative, because although Krishna is driving the chariot of Arjuna, we shouldn't think that Krishna is a chariot driver. Krishna is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether he's driving Arjuna's chariot, or whether he's being bound by Mother Yasoda, whether he's dancing with the gopis, whether a friend is riding upon his shoulders when in Vrindavan, whether he's in the form of a boar or a fish or a tortoise. He is still always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Arjuna knew this. So we should not think in any way that Krishna is anything other than the Lord, even though he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. Krishna is almighty and is especially the cause of fearlessness for the devotees. A devotee of the Lord is always fearless because of the protection given by the Lord. Material existence is something like a blazing fire in the forest, which can be extinguished by the mercy of the Lord Sri Krishna. The spiritual master is the mercy representative of the Lord. Therefore, a person burning in the flames of material existence may receive the rains of mercy of the Lord through the transparent medium of a self-realized spiritual master. The spiritual master, by his words, can penetrate into the heart of the suffering person and inject knowledge transcendental, which can alone extinguish the fire of material existence. It is the very nature of material existence that causes the burning of life. People who lack knowledge want to remove misery while enjoying in the material world, but that is impossible. Arjuna continues, "You are the original. Tvam adya purusham shaksha." Shaksha means directly. You're exactly, directly, tvam, the adya purusha, the original personality. Ishvara prakriti para. Kunti Devi later in the next chapter is going to say this same thing. You are the supreme controller of the material world. You are Krishna. You are the original personality of Godhead, who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. That is Kaivai Stita Atmani Mayam Vyudasya Chit Shakti. The Chit Shakti is the Krishna's spiritual Sarup Shakti, his internal energy. And by the potency of his internal energy, Maya is cast far away. And Krishna always is always with his Sarup Shakti, his internal energy. And he has nothing to do with his Maya Shakti. Actually, even when Krishna comes to this world, he is actually not coming to this world. He is not. in the material world. Rather, he is in his, with his internal sarup shakti, his internal energy. So therefore, you have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. That means that we too can have the effects of the material energy cast away only by the effects of Krishna's internal energy, spiritual energy. Arjuna continues by saying, you're always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And yet, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of religion, characterized by religion, the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion and so on, that's Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. So Krishna acts for the benefit of everyone, although he has nothing to gain by his activities. Thus, text 25, you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. So Arjuna happens to be one of those friends who fits exactly into that definition, who happens to need Krishna's help at this particular time. So he says, you benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees. And I happen to be one of those exclusive devotees, and I'm in quite a difficult circumstance at the present, because there happens to be a Brahmastra heading towards me. And I happen to be wrapped in meditation upon you, because I know that no one else can help me. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam, Abhayankara. And now he's asking Krishna for help. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. And here is the first words that Krishna himself speaks here. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Vaitedam Dronaputrasya Brahman Astram Padarshitam Naivasau Vedasamharam Pranabadha Upastite. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, know from me, and he's not going to speak some philosophy, he's going to give some practical knowledge, immediately how Arjuna can get out of this incredible difficulty that he is in. Practically speaking, the nature of a Brahmastra is that when this weapon is shot at someone, it cannot be retracted. It has to find its target. So Arjuna was in such a difficult condition. He took shelter of Krishna, and Krishna is going to give him practical, very practical advice, because he is the protector of his devotees. Know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, the Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. O Arjuna, now he tells him what to do. Now just imagine, a weapon is coming towards us that's irretractable. It cannot be brought back even by the person who sent it. And it is unstoppable. So who can imagine a more dangerous situation? An unstoppable weapon that cannot be retracted is heading right towards us. Can anyone get us out? Well, if anyone can get us out, it's Krishna. So here, Krishna tells how. O Arjuna, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in the military science, not like Asatam, who was only partially new. He knew how to throw it, but didn't know how to retract it. But Arjuna was expert. He knew how to throw his and retract it. Since you are expert in the military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. Vasisutta Goswami said, hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification. And Srila Sridhar Swami explains that this means that he did achman. And after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire, like the disk of the sun, covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent or immediate destruction or the forthcoming destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Sri Krishna desired. So one weapon was coming, Arjuna shot his weapon, and there was no way that first weapon could be retracted. But when they combined, then Arjuna, by retracting his own weapon, retracted both. This was the brilliant solution to an irretractable, impossible problem. Confirmed. Arjuna, then, after having taken away the fire of Aswatthama's last effort to save his own life, then he set about capturing Aswatthama. And he was angry, first of all, because the children had been killed while they were sleeping. Second of all, Aswatthama had shot this Brahmastra weapon. So Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal, even though he was the son of a Brahmana. According, Prabhupada explains in his purport, according to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch this son of a Brahmana like an animal as part of his duty. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the later statements of Sri Krishna. Aswatthama was a bona fide son of Dronacharya and Kripi, but because he had degraded himself to a lower status, of life, it was proper to treat him as an animal and not as a Brahmana. So after binding Aswatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp because he had promised Draupadi. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, he did not have angry eyes like Arjuna did. What a description. His eyes were angry like two blazing molten balls of copper, red, blazing, angry. But Krishna, with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. And the reason why he's going to speak like this, he wants to test Arjuna. He wants to test his sense of duty, his sense of discrimination. So he adds to Arjuna's fire of anger. Arjuna wants to take him back to the camp, but Krishna adds something even more heavy. And he says, Krishna says, O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmana, this Brahman Bandhu. For he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill even an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy or woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. This is according to Manusmriti. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions. according to Manu, Prabhupada explains, the great author of civic codes. There's a reason why we'll read this now, even though it breaks the drama. According to Manu, the great author of civic codes and religious principles, even the killer of an animal is to be considered a murderer, because animal food is never meant for the civilized man, whose prime duty is to prepare himself for going back to Godhead. He says, Manu says, that in the act of killing an animal, there is a regular conspiracy by the party of sinners, and all of them are liable to be punished as murderers, exactly like a party of conspirators who kills a human being combinedly. And who are those conspirators? Who gets the karma? He who gives permission, he who kills the animal, he who sells the slaughtered animal, he who cooks the animal, he who administers distribution of the foodstuff, and at last, he who eats such cooked animal foods are all murderers, and all of them are liable to be punished by the laws of nature. No one can create a living being, despite all advancement of modern science, and therefore no one has the right to kill a living being by one's independent whims. For the animal eaters, the scriptures have sanctioned restricted animal sacrifice only, and such sanctions are there just to restrict the opening of slaughterhouses and not to encourage animal killing. So Krishna here is telling Arjuna that this asatama, he is atatai. Atatai means an aggressor. This is mentioned also, this term is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and in Dharma Shastra as well. He's an aggressor, and even for his own good, he should be killed. Furthermore, I have personally, Krishna says, heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forward the head of the killer of her sons. This man is an assassin and a murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master. He is but the remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Very heavy, Krishna's determination here. Arjuna is already blazing hot with anger, and Krishna is adding some fuel to that already blazing fire to test Arjuna, to see what Arjuna will do. Sutta Goswami said, although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him. Although Asvatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It was not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of his duty, nor was Lord Sri Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord Sri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. The gopis even were put to such a test as well. Prahlad Maharaj was also put to such a test. All pure devotees come out successful in the respective tests by the Lord. He gives his devotees at times very, very difficult circumstances. And sometimes he himself, he's saying, kill him, kill him. But he actually doesn't specifically want Arjuna to kill him. But yet he's saying, kill him, kill him, kill him. He's pushing Arjuna to test Arjuna. After reaching his own camp, Arjuna, along with his dear friend and charioteer, Sri Krishna, entrusted the murderer unto his dear wife, who was lamenting for her murdered son. So he brought Asvatthama in, all bound up like an animal, and brought him before Draupadi. Draupadi then saw Asvatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Imagine, he was now confronted with the mother of the children he had slain, cut off their heads. Due to her female nature, and due to her being naturally good and well-behaved, she showed him due respect as a brahmana. She could not tolerate Aswatthama's being bound by ropes. And being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a brahmana, our spiritual master. So in these verses, from 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, there's six verses where Draupadi gives very dharmic reasons, very religious reasons, good reasons. She presents her side why, despite what she had said previously, her happiness, what Arjuna had said about bringing his head, she wants him released. Now she's going to give her reasons. And in the 49th text, when Yudhisthira speaks, he actually, that text summarizes these reasons. So the first is, he's a brahmana, our spiritual master, dharmic. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows, the dhanaved, and the confidential arts of controlling weapons. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing, being represented by his son. His wife, Kripi, did not undergo a sati with you because he had a son. O most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipable. My Lord, do not make the wife of Dronacharya, Kripi, cry like me. I am aggrieved for the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like me. If the kingly administrative order, being unrestricted in sense control, offends the Brahmana order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family and brings grief upon all. So now, Suta Goswami said, O Brahmana, King Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion. That's one person, one reason. Were justified, they were according to the principles of justice. They were glorious, full of mercy, equity, and without duplicity. So those six verses of Draupadi's reasons, very religious reasons and good reasons, are summarized in each one of the verses that are mentioned here. And Yudhisthira, so Draupadi said, release him. Krishna first said, kill him. Now Draupadi says, release him. And Yudhisthira agrees and says, release him. Nakul, who is famous for being wise, by the way, and Sahadev, the younger, the other one of the twins, who was famous for his astronomy and swordsmanship, learned from Dronacharya, and Satyaki, Arjun, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Devaki, and the lady and the other ladies also unanimously agreed with the king. So, on one hand, Krishna said, kill him first. Now Krishna is saying, release him. So he's saying both. And Draupadi said, release him. And Yudhisthira said, release him. Nakul and Sahadev said, release him. And the other ladies said, release him. And Satyaki said, release him. Bhim, however, disagreed with him and recommended killing this culprit who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose and for neither his nor his master's interest. So on one hand, Bhim saying, kill him, and all the others are saying, spare him, kill him, spare him, kill him, spare him. Chaturbhuj, the forearm one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhim, Draupadi, and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna, and he began to speak as if smiling. So Arjuna, what was he supposed to do? Kill him, spare him, kill him, spare him, kill him. Here's Prabhupada's purport, because Krishna is called Chaturbhuj here. Lord Sri Krishna has two arms, and why is he designated as forearm is explained by Sridhar Swami. Both Bhima and Draupadi held opposite views about killing Aswatthama.
Bhima wanted him to be immediately killed, while Draupadi wanted to save him. We can imagine Bhima ready to kill, while Draupadi is obstructing him. And in order to prevent both of them, the Lord discovered another two arms. Originally, the primeval Lord Sri Krishna displayed only two arms, but in his Narayan feature, he exhibits four. In his Narayan feature, he resides with his devotees in the Vaikuntha planets, while in his original Sri Krishna feature, he resides in the Krishna Loka planet, far, far above the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. Therefore, if Sri Krishna is called Chaturbhuja, there is no contradiction. If need be, he can display hundreds of arms, as he exhibited in his Vishwarupa shown to Arjuna. Therefore, one who can display hundreds and thousands of arms can also manifest four whenever needed. When Arjuna was perplexed about what to do with Aswatthama, see, because Arjuna previously, he was perplexed because he didn't know what to do, because the Brahmastra was heading towards him. How was he going to save his life? Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktinabha, Bhayankara, Krishna, help me. And now, even when this fight was between, this struggle, this disagreement was between the two all the devotees, Bhima on one side and Draupadi and the others on the other side, who is going to solve that problem? The same person, that Krishna. So therefore, when Arjuna was perplexed about what to do with Aswatthama, and this time Arjuna didn't even have to ask Krishna. Lord Sri Krishna, as the very dear friend of Arjuna, voluntarily took up the matter just to make a solution. And he was smiling also. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, said, "A friend of a Brahmana is not to be killed. But if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. All these rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife. You said you were going to chop off his head. And you must also act for the satisfaction of Bhimasena and me. So you have to kill him. He's an aggressor, you have promised, but yet a Brahmana, a friend of a Brahmana, even a Brahma Bandhu, is not to be killed. So you have to do both. You have to kill him and you have to not kill him." Text 55. Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders. He said two things, kill him and not kill him. So by Krishna's grace, Arjuna could understand how to kill him and not to kill him at the same time. And thus, with his sword, Arjuna severed both the hair and jewel from the head of Aswatthama. He, Aswatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide for killing a child. And now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. He was born with a jewel embedded within his head. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Prabhupada explains. Thus being insulted and humiliated, Aswatthama was simultaneously killed and not killed by the intelligence of Lord Krishna and Arjuna. Cutting the hair from his head and depriving him of his wealth and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of a Brahmana. There is no injunction for killing the body. Thereafter, the son of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, perform the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. So here we have seen Krishna in the Bhagavatam for the first time. And how have we seen him? Serving his devotee, protecting his devotees, solving quarrels between his devotees, giving intelligence to his devotees. So how wonderful is Krishna? So we, by the mercy of Sutta Goswami, who's describing this, we should be getting impetus, continued and ever-increasing impetus to give ourselves fully to Krishna and to become a devotee. Okay, thank you very much. Any
questions or comments? Yes.
All the way through the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna telling Arjuna why he should do his stand and do his duty on Krishna's behalf.
Mm.
And then here, Krishna's telling him strongly, just kill him immediately, just one insignificant, useless wretch. So how did Arjuna pass that test and understand that it wasn't Krishna's real desire?
You mean, what was the methodology, or what was the meaning of the test? Did he pass the? How on earth did he pass the test?
Because considering that previously, understood it was his duty to fight, kill.
This was after the war. That's one thing. Mm. Second is that Krishna told him so many times to fight. Mm. Ultimately, he said, "This is the highest religious principle: surrender unto my will." So he was also obviously inspired by Krishna to know what to do due to his great sincerity and purity. But how in the world he passed the test without Krishna's mercy, he couldn't have, certainly, with Krishna's aid. Even how did he know when Krishna said, kill him and not kill him? How did he figure out how to kill him and not kill him? Krishna didn't say, why don't you cut his hair and cut out the jewel? He said, kill him and not kill him. But Krishna also inspired him at the same time. From within, with the intelligence. Adami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupayanti te. Savasya chaham vidya sanavisto matya smitam jnanam. Aponam cha. He gives intelligence and he takes it. He gives remembrance and he takes it. He would not allow Karna, due to the curse, his teacher, his military teacher, Bhagava. He would not allow him to remember the proper mantras during the Kurukshetra, and thus he was killed. Tim, you had a question?
Yes, I was wondering, Prabhu Vishnu Swami, I think, if I recall rightly, said that Ashvatthama was cursed as a yeti and walked the rest of Kali Yuga as a yeti.
You know what a yeti is? It's not an abominable snowman.
No, he was grow hair. He would grow hair all over
his body. Yeti or a yati?
Maybe a yati.
A yabby, a yabo. I can't remember what he said. Huh?
I think I saw him in the street the other day.
You did. There we go.
Is it true or not true?
That? True what?
That he was cursed to become a yeti and walk.
But do you mean a yeti? You know, a yeti means a renunciate.
A yeti.
A yeti. Maybe you heard with Australian ears and he was speaking in Sanskrit. A hairy fellow.
He could
roam the earth.
He still had all his mystic powers and he'd walk underneath the earth and come out of another place and all this, but he wouldn't be able to get off the planet.
Due to his renunciation, he becomes purified and he becomes exalted because of this. Now we will hear Siddhanta. Go ahead. You were raising your hand to answer it. Now why are you asking, what's the question? Oh, what? Oh, okay. You'll have to hear, okay.
Cursed himself, Ashwatthama.
Two?
The same curse that people keep wanting.
Did he say become a yeti or a yati?
I don't know that.
Maybe he said a yeti yati.
Maharaj gave more details on this episode.
Hmm.
How he inspired Arjuna and what he said to help kill him and not to kill him, more details than Maharaj.
Hmm.
He verbally told him actually what to do.
Hmm.
And that means kill you.
Mm.
If a kshatriya is dishonored like that, that his head is shaved and things like that, and is almost like the death, worse than the death.
That's what it says in Bhagavad Gita. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. What? He wouldn't have grown hair? Prabhu, hair does not make a man honorable. Yes.
My doubt and question is, when Duryodhan and Yudhishthira was brought into the assembly for their judgment, and there was a drama.
For their judgment?
Judgment. And they were about who is qualified to be a king. And this was, they had to come to this point, who is qualified, Duryodhan or Yudhishthira. So, in that court...
I don't know enough about that part of the Mahabharata to comment on that. But here, first, one thing we do know is the Bhagavatam gives the topmost Siddhanta. And yet Krishna had made this contradictory situation for the glorification of Arjuna. So that much we know. Exactly what, it's like there's so many laws always, but one has to know how to apply the law to a particular circumstance. So exactly the details of that I can't really say, and how it applies over here. But we should take the lesson that Sutta Goswami is teaching us, and that is that Krishna protects his devotees. Krishna cares for his devotees. Krishna wants his devotees to be glorified. As the devotee wants Krishna to be glorified, Krishna wants the devotee to be glorified. Yeah.
Is there any relationship between the two? There's so many numbers in
Battle of Kurukshetra took place in 18 days. There are 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. These are auspicious numbers. Multiples of 9. 64. 108 is considered ostataras. Sata. This is an auspicious number. 64, I don't know any. The 108 signifies transcendence. I don't know anything about 64.
That multiplies to 1, but in...
Except that 8 times 8 is 64.
And is there some way that the 8 is the fallen...
Especially if...
The fallen return of the soul, or something, represent the fallen...
I have no idea. The 8, you're saying, is the symbol of infinity if it's sleeping. A sleeping 8.
Right.
As they say, dunno. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. So tomorrow.